and lay back on my pillow. Yes? Dear, I need help. I rolled over enough to peer at the clock. Bertie, it's 4 in the morning.
I'm sorry. Have I inconvenienced you? I'll just lie here in pain. What's a better time to call?
Arg. Guilt surged through me. I sat up, rubbing my eyes. I'll call the ambulance.
No, don't do that. I'm in my nightie.
Aunt Bertie, I'm sure they've seen nightgowns before.
Not mine, they haven't. And they're not going to either.
I slid my legs over the side of the bed. Okay, I'm on my way.
Thank you, dear.
Grumbling under my breath, I pulled on jeans and a turtleneck and grabbed a jacket and my purse in case I had to go to the hospital with her. Trixie and Twinkletoes followed me to the door. You guys better stay here this time. I locked the door behind me and trotted downstairs through a silent inn. As I passed through registration, I told Casey where I was going just in case a trip to the hospital was involved and I wasn't back by breakfast. I fired up one of the inn's electric golf carts and headed for Bertie's house. Wagtail slumbered. A breeze scattered dried leaves, and the moon cast a strong beam through bare branches. Porch lights and a few pumpkins glowed in the night, but no lights shone in houses yet, except at Aunt Bertie's, where the windows were ablaze. 2 black witch's brooms rested upside down on her front porch. Pumpkin-colored pillows created an inviting vignette on the white wicker settee, until I noticed that a faux bat hung upside down in the black birdcage on the table next to it. Huh, I never knew Bertie had a sense of humor. She had clustered pumpkins around a chair that held an elaborate flower arrangement containing sunflowers and wickedly wild grapevines that jutted out in odd directions. And right next to it, a faux skeleton perched on a closed coffin. His legs were crossed, as though he were simply taking a break. I walked up the steps, and it dawned on me that her door was probably locked. How ironic that I might now be the one trying to break in. I knocked as a formality, then tried the doorknob. The door readily swung open. Bertie stood in her foyer, wearing bright red lipstick that matched a chic dress. Years ago, she would have been called a handsome woman. Her face was attractive, almost beautiful, but the sour expression she always wore took it down a notch. She was painfully thin. The skin on her face clung tightly to prominent cheeks and a nose that might be a bit too pointed. A streak of white hair sprang from the middle of her forehead, emphasizing the darkness of the rest of her hair. Her complexion seemed too pale and frighteningly close to being witchy.
How nice of you to bother to come, Holly. I understand you've been in town 36 hours, she sniffed.
You're up and dressed and your hair is done.
What? No hug?
Was she kidding? I glared at her.
Is that a stopwatch in your hand?
18 minutes. You're going to have to work on that. Had she lost her mind?
No, I'm not. Because you are never going to pull a stunt like this again.
I pointed my finger at her.
If you do, then you can forget about me ever coming to your rescue.
What a moronic trick. A woman in her 60s ought to know better. Unless she wasn't thinking straight anymore.
If your mother had taught you any manners, you would have come by to visit immediately.
Oh, but it's good manners to wake a person in the middle of the night and haul her over here on false pretenses? She slapped a manicured hand to the base of her throat.
No one speaks to me that way.
Maybe it's time someone did. I turned on my heel and marched out, fuming. I didn't look back until I reached the golf cart. Bertie stood in her doorway, holding the doorframe with one hand, looking forlorn. Her sad expression cut through my anger. I had never lived near relatives as an adult. Maybe I should have dropped by to say hello the second I hit town. I drove away with guilt creeping over me. But I shook it off. Maybe Bertie was the loon my father had always claimed she was. The golf cart was rolling slowly through a residential neighborhood in Wagtail when a little white Jack Russell Terrier darted across the street in front of it. That couldn't be Trixie. It sure looked like her, though. When a calico kitten sped along behind the dog, I turned the golf cart at the next corner. How could they have gotten out? I called them, trying not to wake up sleeping Wagtailites. They ran through yards, evading me. I would glimpse them, and they would disappear again. I turned to the right, toward the pedestrian zone, and spied them happily scampering along. I parked the golf cart, hitched my purse over my shoulder, stepped out, and ran. Where had those little goofballs gone? The scent of burning wood hung heavily in the air. I cut through the park-like middle of the pedestrian zone and stumbled on a piece of shattered pumpkin. I hated to think that some drunk had damaged the pretty carved pumpkins that lined the walkway. In the clearing near the Wagtail Springs Hotel, I was shocked to discover that the bonfire had started again. It wasn't blazing yet, but it would be soon. The scouts must not have put it out properly. It didn't appear to be spreading, thank goodness, but I pulled out my phone and called 911 immediately. The dispatcher promised to send Officer Dave over to check on it. I spied Trixie on the other side of the fire, much closer than I thought was safe. "Trixie!" She clamped her teeth on a heavy branch and pulled it. "No!" I ran toward her, knowing perfectly well that that was probably the wrong thing to do. But I had to stop her from dragging around a limb that was burning on one end. If she didn't hurt herself, she might set something on fire. The Wagtail Springs Hotel loomed nearby. That place was probably a tinderbox. If she dropped the branch on the wood porch, I might not be able to stop the fire from spreading. She saw me coming. I sighed with relief when she dropped the branch and sniffed the ground. I grabbed the limb and tossed it onto the fire. A moment later, she picked up something else that I couldn't quite make out. "Drop, Trixie!" She danced just out of my reach. Happily, a scent must have interested her, and she dropped what she held in her mouth. Trixie's nose took her in a circle around the bonfire. I followed her as fast as I could without running, trying to be calm so she wouldn't sense my desperation to catch her. Just as I bent over and reached for her, she took off, her nose still to the ground. Ugh! Undoubtedly on the scent of an evil squirrel. I didn't dare leave the fire, but on the other hand, I didn't want to lose sight of my two rascals either. Trixie was getting farther away. She zoomed by the Wagtail Springs Hotel. In the night, with no one else around, it looked unbelievably spooky. No wonder people thought they saw ghosts in the eerie windows. Frantic barking started. It had to be Trixie. I listened carefully for a clue to her whereabouts. I jogged a few steps. "Trixie? Trixie?" The furious barking continued. Where was Dave? Like magic, he strode up, dressed in his uniform, an oasis of calm in the night. I waved at him and ran after Trixie. I would explain as soon as I had Trixie and Twinkletoes safely in my arms. The light from the street lamps didn't stretch far as I rounded the hotel. I slowed down, stepping through the grass carefully while my eyes adjusted to the darkness away from the fire. Without the light of the moon, the expansive lawn in back of the hotel would have been treacherous. The huge gazebo shimmered faintly. The barking grew louder. But where were they? I squinted and scanned the lawn for any sign of their white coats. Twinkletoes, where's my pretty kitty? I tried to sound relaxed so they would come to me. Meep. Twinkletoes didn't speak much, but that sounded like her cute little mew. Were they in the gazebo? Twinkletoes darted out at me and swiped a paw at my legs as I neared the structure. I wasn't quick enough to grab her. She scampered into the gazebo. Trixie, I called. I have treats. At this point, I would have said anything to get them to come to me, but they didn't. Trixie hadn't stopped barking either. Yap, yap, yap. Built at ground level, the gazebo contained a mineral spring in the middle. I had played there as a child, joyfully splashing my cousin. Shallow water covered ancient stones, worn to smoothness. Simple wood stairs led from the decking into the pool. As I approached, Trixie ran around the deck of the gazebo, yipping. I sighed. This would be an aggravating exercise in futility because she could simply scamper around in a big circle, always keeping out of reach. She would sense my desperation. I tried to be calm and called her softly. She backed away and backed away. I stepped onto the decking and squinted in the darkness. Why hadn't I brought a flashlight? Trixie's white coat gleamed in the moonlight. She whined at the water and at the person floating in it, face down. 5. Trixie stopped barking when I screamed. My purse dropped to the floor. The contents clattered as they spilled onto the wooden deck. I yelled for Dave. There was only one thing to do and no time to think about it. I had to turn the person over. I plunged into the cold water. It came up just over my knees. A filmy white dress floated around the body. Long, silvery hair caught the glow from the light of the moon. I flipped her and dragged her to the side, but even though she was a slight woman, I couldn't lift her out of the shallow pool. The gauzy white fabric caught on her arms and mine, wrapping us like mummies. After several tries, I managed to maneuver her shoulders up against the edge of the deck. Where was Dave? I yelled his name again. Minutes mattered. I couldn't allow her head to drop back into the pool. Pinning her with my shoulder to keep her from sliding down, I hoisted her legs up enough to roll her over onto the deck, dislodging the wig she wore. Copper hair fell to the floor. Mallory! Shock flooded through me. The young woman who dreamed of her wedding didn't appear to be breathing. I tried to recall the first aid classes I had taken years ago. I leaned Mallory on her side so water could drain from her mouth. She needed CPR right that moment. I started it, but was having no success. Dave! It broke my heart to have to stop even for a second. I rushed to the entrance. No wonder he couldn't hear me. In the quiet of the night, the bonfire crackled loud enough to drown my cries for help. I ran toward it, waving my arms. Dave! Dave! Help! When he turned toward me, I waved frantically and jogged back to the gazebo to start chest compressions again, wondering what else I could possibly do to revive her. When I saw the beam of a strong flashlight, I jumped up. Here! We're over here! Dave aimed his light at Mallory. Is she alive? Dave flashed the light on her face. I don't know. I found her floating face down. I've been doing compressions, but there's no sign of... I couldn't bring myself to say it. Dave kneeled beside her and felt for a pulse. I'm not getting anything. He handed me the flashlight and resumed the chest compressions. Call 911 and have them send an ambulance. Twinkletoes scampered down the steps that ran into the water. She reached out, patting a dark ring on the water with her paw. I squinted at it, a wreath of black roses. Mallory must have been dressed as the ghost of Becca Wraith. According to local legend, Becca's ghost always wore a circle of black roses in her hair. Your cat's here, too? What's going on? I called 911 before answering him. Only when the dispatcher assured me that an ambulance was on the way did I hang up and explain to Dave how I came to be there. I have no idea how Trixie and Twinkletoes managed to get out of the inn. My wet clothes clung to me and the night was cold, but I ran in search of the ambulance anyway. I flashed Dave's light at them and shouted. Three amazingly calm EMTs crossed the lawn to the gazebo and peered at Mallory. One of them checked for a pulse. "Are you a relative?" He took over the chest compressions. "No, I just happened to find her." Dave stepped aside so they could work. He snagged Twinkletoes. Handing her to me, he said, "You better put on some dry clothes. I'll come to the inn if I need more information." "Thanks." I hoped they could resuscitate Mallory. Carrying Twinkletoes in my arms, I called Trixie. She came with us but dodged off to the fire again. I was far too cold and wet to play games. I called her again and again. She raced toward me carrying something in her mouth. Ugh, I hoped it hadn't been alive at one time. I reached for it, but she ran from me each time I tried to grab it. She willingly hopped into the golf cart, though. Dawn hadn't broken yet when I returned to the inn. Safely inside, I finally released my grip on Twinkletoes. She leaped from my arms and immediately started grooming her fur, no doubt miffed that it was wet. Trixie still carried the thing in her mouth, but indoors I could see it clearly. I grabbed a treat from the cookie jar at the registration desk and tried to barter with Trixie. The scent of the treat must have been powerful, because she finally gave in and traded me a faux fur black cat for the cookie. I rocked back on my heels, laughing. A toy. The cat's back was arched like a Halloween cat. Some dog had probably dropped it at the bonfire. I handed it back to her. "What happened to you?" asked Casey. I jumped in a mineral bath to pull Mallory Gooley out. "What? Is she okay?" "I don't think so. Is she a friend of yours?" "No. I've seen her around town, though. She doesn't live here. At least I don't think so." "You better get cleaned up. Aren't you freezing?" I nodded and shuffled away like I was 100 years old. "Hey, Holly, how's your aunt?" "Huh?" I was still so shocked about finding Mallory that I hadn't given Bertie another thought. "She's fine. Thanks for asking, Casey." "She's absolutely fine and dandy." Trixie refused to take the elevator, but I was in no condition to climb two more flights of stairs. She met me at the door to our apartment. It was locked tight. I opened the door to find Twinkletoes resting on top of a box, cleaning her fur and looking so innocent that, if I didn't know better, I would have thought she'd been there the whole time. The cat door. In my haste to leave, I'd forgotten about it. I hobbled to the dining room of my quarters. Way down on a bottom shelf, the cat door was open. It led down hidden stairs to Oma's private kitchen. I wedged heavy books in front of it so there would be no more escapes for the time being. I took a long, hot shower, but it didn't wash away the events of the night. Wrapped in a fluffy sugar maple in bathrobe, embroidered with my name, I had just stepped out of the bathroom when a muffled cry alarmed me. Someone was in my apartment. 6. I stumbled around the boxes in the hallway and craned my neck to see into the kitchen.
A stooped man wearing white gloves and a butler's uniform placed a tray on the counter. He turned and his thick gray eyebrows jumped up at the sight of me. "Miss Miller, I'm so sorry to have disturbed you." I stubbed my toe on a carton. "I must say it's a bit of a mess in here with boxes everywhere. Shall I unpack them for you?"
"No, thank you. That won't be necessary."
I peered at the tray. A carafe of something. Sugar, cream, a dog treat, a cat treat, and a chocolate croissant. This man was definitely friend, not foe. I studied him. Why did he seem vaguely familiar? "I'm sorry, I don't know your name. You weren't here last month, were you?"
"Niles Huckle, miss. I remember you. You played with Miss Clementine when you were just little girls. Your grandmother has hired me to help Shelley 5 mornings a week. Mrs. Miller likes hot coffee and exactly 2, no more, no less, honey cinnamon graham crackers and a biscuit for Gingersnap at 6 a.m. sharp. She ordered this for you. If you should prefer something else, please let me know. I shan't let on if you don't like what she sent."
"It's lovely, thank you. What a luxury. This certainly beat rushing around to leave the house and then sitting in traffic to get to work." Twinkletoes wound around his ankles, marking him with the side of her face. "Now go on, you little scamp. You'll get white fur all over my trousers." I locked the door behind him and asked Trixie, "Why didn't you bark at him?" She wagged her tail, but wasn't divulging her secrets. Either she was all barked out, or he bribed her with a dog biscuit. Feeling quite guilty about indulging in a pre-breakfast chocolate croissant, I ate it anyway, and shared the other treats with Trixie and Twinkletoes. Steaming hot tea with milk and sugar first thing in the morning was living the high life for me. Room service and someone to clean my quarters? It was almost too heavenly to contemplate. I would be thoroughly spoiled forevermore. Cold to the bone, I lit a fire and sat on the hearth with my hands wrapped around my hot mug of tea. The image of Mallory's gown floating around her was burned into my mind. How could she have drowned in so little water? Why didn't she sit up or stand up? Could the long gauzy material have tangled around her legs? 2 feet of water. Short as I was, it hadn't even reached my hips. It was like drowning in a bathtub. I stretched my bare toes toward the crackling fire and thought about the previous night. Something had been going on with Mallory. She'd talked about marrying Mark, yet he had been cold as ice toward her. And she upset Eva, who'd said, "Two can play that game." Goosebumps popped up on my arms. I wanted Mallory's death to have been an accident, but wishes wouldn't make it so. Something untoward had happened to that poor young woman last night. I'd heard of people drowning in shallow water before, but why was she in a costume? The last time I'd seen her was at the bonfire. She wore a dress with fashionable costume jewelry. When had she changed clothes? She didn't have family around that I knew of, and if Mark and Eva were any indication, not much in the way of friends either. The least I could do was make some discreet inquiries. Dying alone in a strange place was bad enough. I couldn't desert her. She needed someone to be her friend now, especially if she had been murdered. I finally blew my hair dry. When I turned off the blow dryer, I heard voices, more than one. I was beginning to feel like my new home was Grand Central Station. In a hurry, I found khakis and a long-sleeved periwinkle blue V-neck tee in a suitcase, pulled them on, and ventured into the sitting area. The voices came from the TV. Trixie sat in her favorite toile armchair, and Twinkletoes lay sphinx-like on top of a big packing box. Both of them were watching the news. "How did you turn the TV on?" I searched for the remote. thinking one of them must have accidentally pounced on it. They probably knew where it was, but in the chaos of boxes, I didn't see it anywhere. Relieved that no one else had entered my apartment, I navigated between boxes back to the bedroom, slid on a belt, and added gold hoop earrings. As I passed the French doors, I paused for a moment to step out onto the balcony that overlooked the heart of Wagtail, the pedestrian zone. Many of the leaves had fallen off the trees, exposing gnarly branches, but creating a charming mosaic of reds, oranges, and golds across the grass. Cornstalks and pumpkins decorated the expanse of green between the wide sidewalks. It reminded me of a long park with a walkway winding through it. Benches offered places to rest. Lively dogs could run off some energy in one of the fenced play zones. The lack of traffic noise still amazed me. Wagtail had become a golf cart community, allowing precious few vehicles through the residential streets. Tourists parked at a large facility just outside of town. Electric golf carts, locally known as Wagtail taxis, transported them into town. Beneath me, early risers strolled and jogged with dogs and an occasional cat. A couple of the coffee shops and bakeries appeared to be open, but most of the stores were still closed. To the left and right, the roofs of Wagtail made for a charming scene, and beyond it all, mountains rose in the distance like a beautiful, undulating quilt of fall colors. Returning to the Sugar Maple Inn was like coming home again. My parents had moved away when I was very small, but they had sent me back to Wagtail and Oma every summer. Oma put my cousin Josh, her best friend's grandson Holmes, and me to work at the inn. We had learned everything from the bottom up. We washed dishes, whitewashed fences, checked guests in and out, and made beds. Yet there had always been plenty of time for swimming and playing in the woods. They had been wonderful times, away from the issues of my divorcing parents. Even though my father and his sister had left Wagtail, the Sugar Maple Inn was the family homestead. It was more of a home to me than any place I had ever lived. I gazed over my new hometown with joy. There was something special about new beginnings and starting fresh, leaving old problems behind. In my case, my old boyfriend Ben and a horrible problem at my previous job. They were in my past now, and wonderful new possibilities lay ahead. And then I remembered Mallory. Maybe they had resuscitated her. I would hate to think that her future had been snuffed out. She was so young and so full of happiness about her wedding. I would have to check with Dave. I closed my eyes and hoped for the best. The cool morning air brought on shivers, prompting me to dig through my suitcase again, where I found a lavenderish fleece vest that coordinated with my top. "You guys ready for breakfast?" I asked, returning to the kitchen. I spooned some chicken bits with sauce into Twinkletoes' bowl. In the small dining room, I dropped to my knees and opened the cat door in case she wanted to return later for a snack or quiet nap. Trixie was still watching TV. I discovered an off button on the TV set and pressed it, thinking Trixie and Twinkletoes were far smarter than me because they knew where the remote was. I nabbed Trixie's leash in case I needed to coax her away from the meals of other dogs, and the three of us were out the door. Trixie and Twinkletoes sprang down the grand staircase far faster than I could go. By the time I reached the dining area, Twinkletoes was watching leaves blowing outside the window. The muscles in her shoulders jerked as if she meant to leap after them. Trixie had her front paws on Oma's lap. I said good morning to Oma and latched Trixie's leash on her collar. We'd better make a potty stop first. We passed the registration desk on our way out. Zelda was arriving for her shift. She looked like a movie star with a hangover. Huge dark sunglasses shielded her eyes. She was massaging her temples. When Casey and I chimed, "Good morning," Zelda placed a finger over her lips. "Shh, not so loud, please." "Rough night?" I asked. "The night was fine, but morning has been pretty grim so far." She yawned. "I'm getting too old to stay out half the night and go to work the next day." Trixie and I walked outside. We were back in a flash. Zelda held a bottle of aspirin in her hand. "I'll be having breakfast if you need help." She nodded. Trixie ran ahead of me to the dining hall. When I sat down at Oma's table, I leaned toward her and whispered, "Has Dave called you by any chance?" Oma rested her hand on top of mine. "I'm sorry, Liebchen. Dave said they tried very hard to save her, but it was too late. He called me early this morning because he had to notify the interim mayor." "No. Oh, no." I slumped in my chair. "How awful. I didn't have much hope, but still." "It is very sad. She was only 29. Now tell me, please, what were you doing out there in the middle of the night?" I explained about Birdie's call. "What I don't understand is how Trixie and Twinkletoes managed to leave the inn. The cat door was open in my apartment, but Casey would never have allowed them to leave through the registration doors." "Polly, did you lock the kitchen door last night?" I thought back. "I'm pretty sure I locked it when Dave was here." Oma pulled her hand-knitted sweater closed, as though she felt a chill. "It wasn't locked this morning." "Maybe a guest went out that way?" But even as I offered that explanation, I knew it didn't make sense. Why would someone go into the private part of the inn and leave through the back door?
"The front door wasn't locked either."
"I fear you are correct. I have made a mistake by moving the registration desk to the side entrance, thus leaving the front door unobserved."
Shelley bustled over to our table, tucking a strand of light brown hair firmly into her bun.
"I'm so glad you're back, Holly. Chocolate chip pumpkin pancakes with maple syrup and maple glazed bacon for breakfast this morning? We have a doggy version, too. Chocolate free, of course." Oh, the guilt. I had allowed myself to gobble all the rich food on my last visit. But now that I was here for good, I really shouldn't. I spied the remnants of maple syrup on Oma's plate, and the scent of bacon from another table wafted by. Trixie lifted her nose, no doubt catching the aroma. Maybe just this once we could indulge. Sounds wonderful. Trixie and I will both have the pancakes. Thanks. I gazed at Trixie. We're going to have to do a lot of walking to work off those calories. She didn't seem to be at all concerned about that.
Did you take her to training?
Not yet. She saw the vet and was spayed, but otherwise it was all I could do to rent my house, pack it up, and move. Besides, there are probably more trainers here in Wagtail. I'll make arrangements as soon as I get organized. A guest walked out to the terrace, and Twinkletoes jumped back in alarm when a gust from the door shook a spray of decorative bats that were flying across the huge window. She stalked them carefully from below, periodically jumping up to try to reach one. By the way, nice job last night with a ghost orb and the lights in registration. You had the ghost hunters going. Oma raised her eyebrows.
"Casey told me about that. He was quite impressed, but you are giving me credit for something I did not do."
I tilted my head at her. "Really? Why don't I believe you?"
"I admit that it would have been great fun to greet the ghost hunters with such an event, but I had nothing to do with it. I was at a meeting about the mayor."
"Then it must have been Mr. Luciano."
"He's been here a week already, but quite busy.
I don't imagine he would bother to make up such a thing.
I doctored my second cup of steaming tea. So what's with Mr. Huckle?
He is delightful, yes. He worked for the Wiggins family for many, many years, but Peaches, the last wife, kicked him out. I could not bear to see him suffering without a job. He is not very fast or strong any more, but guests have raved about how considerate he is. He acts as though he is everyone's personal valet, shining shoes, walking dogs, delivering flowers and packages to rooms. He's an excellent dog and cat sitter, I'm told. Her head wobbled from side to side a bit, and I must say that I love the indulgence of coffee waiting for me when I rise in the morning. I miss him on his days off. Down to business. I wasn't quite sure what my responsibilities would be at the inn. Oma wanted more time to enjoy life, and running the inn was a 24/7 job. What's on tap for today? Should we make a list of things you expect me to do? Yes, this is a very good idea. Perhaps we can work on the list later on? It should be fairly quiet. We have a full house, but almost all of them are ghost hunters. She lowered her voice. The lady eating alone is Lillian Elsner, the widow of the famous congressman. She arrived a few days ago. Lillian is one of the two guests not affiliated with our ghost hunters. Her little Yorkie is Glory B. Aha! The woman who had paced the hallways last night. Lillian was what my mother would have called a femme fatale. I put her near 50, even though she appeared younger. I had met a lot of well-heeled women like her in my days as a fundraiser. Blonde tresses curled just below her shoulders in a breezy, just-rolled-out-of-bed style that had been carefully cut by a clever hairdresser. The blonde probably hid the beginnings of gray, but it didn't hide gentle laugh wrinkles around her eyes. The sleeves of her oversized white shirt were rolled up, exposing tanned arms that sported gold bangles. A sweet Yorkshire terrier sat in the chair next to her, behaving better than some of the children I'd seen in restaurants. A rhinestone-encrusted collar circled the little dog's neck. At least I hoped they were rhinestones. Large bejeweled rings enhanced Lillian's fingers. Except for dark mascara and eyeliner, her makeup seemed non-existent. A clear gloss shimmered on her lips. Altogether, a look calculated to appear casual and devil-may-care, but, in reality, carefully planned. I whispered to Oma, "You told Dave we don't have any wealthy guests right now." Oma blinked at me. "So I did. I forgot all about Lillian's jewelry. Let's get that bolt on the door. Maybe you can take over the morning walkthrough to make sure all is in order? And when you have finished that, could you go to the hardware store, Shutter Dogs? Have them make a set of master keys for you, and pick up a deadbolt lock for the back door. I'd be happy to." After breakfast, armed with an old-fashioned clipboard, I toured the public hallways and rooms of the inn, starting from the far end of the cat wing. I paused in the library to be sure it was tidy and had been cleaned during the night, eyed the floor in the dining room, and peeked out on the terrace. The day had warmed a bit, and diners had flocked to the outdoor tables for breakfast in the sunshine, overlooking the lake. Down by the water, Lillian strolled with Glory B, who raced happily along the shoreline. Watching her, Lillian massaged her hip as though it was sore. Back inside, I stopped in the old lobby, where the foyer must have been when the inn was a private residence many decades ago. I examined the grand staircase, which had clearly been vacuumed, and chuckled at the fabulous life-sized mummies and scaredy-cats. Tall candelabra held black candles, with faux flames that flickered even in daylight. I did a 180-degree turn and stepped out on the front porch. It ran across the front of the original building. Every single rocking chair was occupied. Dogs and cats lounged happily while their people lingered over mugs of hot tea and coffee. Before them, the pedestrian zone was coming to life. Gingersnap already occupied her favorite spot on the porch. I reached down to stroke her soft red head. Her tail swished across the floor. I returned indoors to the sitting room, also known as the Dogwood Room, because the floor-to-ceiling windows overlooked Dogwood Lake. I ran a finger across the fireplace mantle, clean as a whistle under the faux spiderwebs. The night housekeeper was doing a great job. The lights on two black, five-armed candelabra flickered. In between them, the large painting of Dogwood Lake had been replaced by a mirror with a chipped black frame that revealed flecks of platinum underneath. The mirror itself was crackled with the patina of age, the silver missing in spots, leaving a haunting dark gray underneath. Oma had embraced the season with gusto. It was fun, even if the mirror was a bit on the creepy side. Twinkletoes lay upside down in a sunbeam. I paused and joined her at the window, thinking of Mallory. How could she have drowned in so little water? Why hadn't she pulled herself out? I knew nothing about her, yet she haunted me as I walked through the inn. Her life had come to such an abrupt end. She was planning to be married, for heaven's sake. Her family must be devastated. Mark must be crushed, especially after being so miffed with her last night. If we knew we would never have another chance, we'd all probably be a lot nicer to one another, especially our loved ones. I forced myself to focus on my job and move on. Trixie accompanied me through the inn and around the grounds off-leash. She paused to greet Glory B. They sniffed each other politely. Meanwhile, I introduced myself to Lillian. She wore a broad-brimmed straw hat and held her hand out to me.
"I heard you were coming. Your grandmother is so pleased that you moved to Wagtail. I hear you lived in the Washington, D.C. area like me."
"Arlington."
"I know you won't miss the traffic. I love it out here with the birds and the chipmunks. It's so peaceful, and Glory Bee is having the time of her life."
"How did she get such a cute name?"
"My husband and her breeder came up with it. Her sister is a fancy show dog. They intended to breed Glory Bee, but my husband talked them into letting us buy her."
Glory Bee scampered back to us, sat down and stared at Lillian, who laughed.
"She's such a bossy little girl. I believe she's ready to move on. Excuse me."
Lillian walked on, with Glory Bee running ahead. Trixie roamed but never lost sight of me, a relief after last night's chase. I called her as a test. She perked her ears and ran to me, planting her bottom on the ground before I could ask her to sit. I rewarded her with a crunchy 3-calorie blueberry treat. We returned through the reception area. Zelda had shed the dark glasses. She crooked her finger at me and shuttled me over to the tiny inn gift shop.
"Officer Dave is here," she whispered. "They're going to think I killed Mallory."
Chill bumps rose on my arms.
"Oh, no, not Zelda. What happened?" "I'm in so much trouble. I don't remember a lot about last night, but I'm pretty sure I said some choice, threatening things to Mallory."
She must have seen the horror in my eyes because she hastened to add,
"Well, she was being a real pest. Felix invited me to go to Hair of the Dog with the apparition apprehenders. We were having a great time."
A wisp of a smile crossed her mouth.
"I think Felix really likes me." And then a couple hours later, Mallory waltzed in and acted like she owned Felix. I'd had a couple of drinks by then, and my tongue might have been a little bit loosened up.
I relaxed. "Oh, Zelda, that was stupid."
"Hey, I didn't know someone was going to kill her."
The cops must suspect us.
Why else would Dave be here to see Felix?
Her eyes darted wildly about the room. You think Felix is a suspect?
He walked us home, she said glumly.
Us?
Felix and Mallory dropped me off at my house first, and then Felix walked her over to Mark's place.
Zelda, I wrapped a reassuring arm around her. Then you have nothing to worry about. Even if someone did kill Mallory, you have an alibi. Felix. Of course, he had a serious problem, but I didn't mention that. It's not as though you were the last person to be with her. Her top lip slid inward, and she chewed on it.
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you? Except I was snockered and didn't trust her, so I might have just happened to sneak out and follow them.
Zelda?
Well, it seemed logical at the time. If they were, you know, sleeping together, I didn't want to be chasing him.
Did he stay at Mark's?
No. He kissed her on the cheek and left.
She turned huge eyes toward me.
But I didn't kill her.
Her hand shook when she briefly covered her mouth.
Of course you didn't.
Where did you go?
Home.
Her voice dropped to a whisper.
But I can't prove it.
Maybe you won't need to. I hugged her and tried to be upbeat, but I was worried for her. Zelda went back to work. I collected my purse and a set of master keys, snapped a leash on Trixie's collar as a precaution, and walked along the pedestrian zone. I stopped by the front porch and asked Gingersnap if she wanted to come with us. She was far too busy kissing two little girls who were giggling and hugging her. The merchants had outdone themselves with Halloween decorations. In addition to pumpkins and cornstalks, they had added cute Halloween signs like, "Watch out for flying bats," and "Black Cat Society meeting here." Store windows featured witches, ghosts, and ghastly goblins. Animatronic skeletons at positively decadent stopped their dance and seemed to peer at us. Trixie yelped in alarm and backed away. I located Shutter Dogs just around a corner on a side street. The hardware store must have been a home once. It was painted a fresh gray with white trim. The merchandise had overflowed to the sidewalk, including colorful wagons that looked like toys but were clearly useful around Wagtail. The front door was set back between two glass showcase windows. A ghost holding a pitchfork ogled customers on one side, while a zombie with a chainsaw glared out of the other. I found someone who could duplicate the keys and shopped around while he replicated them. Upstairs, I discovered an amazing assortment of cat, dog, and horse hooks and drawer pulls that forced me to dawdle and admire. I made note of the lamps that featured all sorts of creatures, like ceramic bunnies and bronze horses, thinking I would have to stop by again when I actually unpacked and found that I needed a lamp. To my complete surprise, I discovered a rack labeled Shutter Dogs mounted on a wall. I had no idea that was the name of the metal scrolls that held shutters open. Trixie pulled me along to the rear of the store, where they stocked a large assortment of food and treats for cats and dogs. Your nose always finds the food, doesn't it? Not that I faulted her for that. I was a little bit too fond of food myself, and I had never starved like she had. Trixie gently pawed at a package of bat-shaped cookies made in Wagtail. I acquiesced and picked up one of the cellophane bags. But you can't eat one until we pay for them. She jumped up, placing her tiny front paws on my knees and cocking her head. Good try, sweetie. You still have to wait. Back on the first floor, I collected the keys and waited in line to pay for them, the treats, and the bolt lock. The woman first in line at the counter must have clipped up her long blonde hair in a hurry. The barrette had gone askew. Her tresses hung lopsided and tousled as though they hadn't been brushed. A fashionable, sleeveless white dress clung to her thin frame.
more appropriate for summer than fall, it appeared oddly out of place in the hardware store, as though she were heading to a cocktail party. The snazzy high heels had to be designer, and a hefty gold bracelet of linked horse snaffle bits hung on her thin wrist. I edged to the side for a better look at her face. Clementine? Her fingers, busy in a quilted leather Chanel wallet, froze. She winced. Sucking in a deep breath, she turned toward me. Her entire frame appeared to sag with relief.
Holly! Just a sec!
She paid for 3 cans of cat food in quarters and dimes, thanked the clerk, and took her bag before stepping aside and reaching out for a hug.
Gosh, it's good to see you. I heard you were moving to town.
We had played together as children when I came to stay with my grandmother during summer vacations. Clementine had grown up with all the luxuries of wealth. Her father was well known as the richest man in Wagtail. They bred beagles and horses on a gentleman's farm just outside of town. But horse-crazed Clementine had never played the princess. She mucked out stalls, was always present when a horse gave birth, and could handle just about anything on the farm. She winced at the sound of a crash in the back of the store.
"I've got it!"
she yelled to the cashier as 2 young boys dashed by her. She reached out and grabbed the collars on their shirts. They squealed, but she reeled them in.
"Say hello to Holly."
"Hello, Holly."
They choked out the words with complete disinterest and wriggled out of her grasp to pet Trixie.
"Where's your sister?"
she asked them. The boys looked at each other. They appeared to be twins and a handful of trouble.
"I'm so sorry. The D-I-V-O-R-C-E,"
she spelled the word,
"has been hard on all of us, and I'm afraid I've been too indulgent."
Speaking to the children, she added,
"I thought we weren't going to act like wild monkeys anymore."
They giggled and ran down the aisle. "I'm sure they're very sweet. How's your dad?"
"Off to a major dog show with Babelicious and her last litter. He's convinced that Baby is a star. I think your grandmother's Great Dane Dolce is at the show, too."
She winced at the sound of another crash.
"If you'll excuse me, I believe we have a mess to clean up in the back. We'll have to get together for lunch sometime."
"I'd like that." I watched as she rounded up her little boys and hustled them down toward a girl about the same age. Triplets? Her daughter was trying to rebuild a pyramid display out of the cans that were rolling on the floor. She carried a stuffed dog, old and threadbare in spots, that looked exactly like the one Clementine had had when we were kids. Clementine set the boys to work picking up the cans and did her best to restore the display. A tall, seriously good-looking man roamed past their aisle, distracting me. Short hair the color of coffee beans had outgrown its cut just enough to be charmingly ruffled. He wore the haven't-shaved-in-a-couple-of-days look. Boots, jeans, T-shirt, green army jacket. He could have walked out of an ad for cowboys. He pretended to study some bins of nails, but it appeared to me that he was actually watching Clementine and her children.
7.
Clementine spotted him, too. Her eyes widened in fear. She wasted no time grabbing the hands of the 2 boys.
"Emily, let's go!"
She dodged out the other end of the aisle and through the store to the entrance, where she beat a hasty exit. The good-looking guy ambled toward the front and exited the door a beat behind her. I set my items on a display rack and dashed outside with Trixie to see if Clementine needed help. Holding the boys' hands, she ran as well as anyone could in those shoes. Her daughter raced ahead of her. The man pretended to window shop. When Clementine and her troop turned the corner, he picked up his pace. Trixie and I did too. By the time we reached the corner, they had all vanished. I paused and listened for any sound of distress. If the guy had nabbed them, surely he wouldn't be able to keep those 2 boys quiet. A pebble shot toward us on the sidewalk. Trixie sniffed it, but I looked in the direction from which it had come. A darling one-story shingled house was set back a bit on a heavily landscaped lot. The sign near the sidewalk identified it as Pampered Pet Portraits. A large show window at the front of the house displayed stunning paintings of animals. Trixie and I strolled toward it.
"Don't come over here!"
It was little more than a frantic hiss. "Clementine?" I peered behind a row of manicured boxwoods. Clementine crouched with her children, holding a hand over each of her son's mouths.
"Is he gone?"
"I think so."
"Make sure."
I casually returned to the sidewalk and gazed around. If he was hiding, I didn't think he'd toss a pebble my way. We doubled back, and I pretended to admire the portraits in the window. "I don't see him, but he could be hiding."
"Ouch!"
Clementine stood up.
"What did I tell you about biting?"
She grabbed the boy's hands.
"Thanks, Holly."
Her eyes canvassed the area so fast that it made me dizzy. "Clementine, do you need help? Maybe you should come to the inn."
"No, no, we're good, thanks."
She took off down the street with her three children. "That was strange, wasn't it?" I asked Trixie as we walked back to the store. I didn't know what Trixie was thinking, but I pondered what I had seen. If the man had been her husband, surely the children would have run to their dad. Was her ex the type who would hire someone to spy on her? I would have to ask Oma if she knew anything about Clementine's domestic problems when I returned to the inn. I paid for my purchases and stepped outside, keeping an eye out for the mysterious man. It dawned on me that Hair of the Dog wasn't too far away. It wouldn't hurt to nose around a little bit for Zelda's sake. "Come on, Trixie, let's ask a few questions." Trixie wagged her agreement and happily sniffed everything her nose could reach on the way to the pub. Located in a Tudor-style building with outdoor tables in the front, the pub was a source of aggravation for some townspeople who hated the noise when it closed at 2 in the morning. We stepped inside. It took a minute for my eyes to adjust to the dim light. A chalkboard advertised bewitching brews, spooky spirits, and monster burgers. The woman behind the bar pushed back hair the color of Kahlua. She tilted her head at me.
"What can I get you, Holly Miller?"
I didn't remember her from my recent visit. It seemed like I would have. She had a girl-next-door face and a don't-mess-with-me attitude. She wasn't much taller than me, but she oozed energy. "Do I know you?"
"You do now."
She stuck out her hand.
"Val Cowlchuck. Everybody knows you. Up until this morning, your arrival back in Wagtail was the hot news in town. Guess they're still talking about you, but in a slightly different way now."
Her voice dropped to a whisper. "Since you found the body." She slapped the bar.
"What will you have?"
It was probably the height of impoliteness to barge into a bar for information without ordering anything. "How about a sparkling water for me and plain water for Trixie?"
"Sure thing."
Val slid a frosty glass toward me and poured water into it. She pulled a small stainless steel dog bowl from under the bar and filled it with cold water. I lowered it to the floor for Trixie, who lapped at it.
"So, Val," I said casually in a hushed voice, "were you here last night at closing?"
I gulped the refreshing water, more thirsty than I'd thought. Val squinted at me.
"You're the third person today to ask me that. I'm here every night at closing. Comes with the territory."
She took a breath.
"Our girl Mallory was very big on zombie brains. They're sweet, so they go down easy, but they pack a wallop. We make 'em small for that reason. But I have a strict policy about cutting people off when we think they've had too much to drink. Mallory was what I'd call giddy. Not stumbling, not slurring words, just talking loud and being silly."
"What was she talking about?"
"I didn't pay much attention. Men and ghosts, I think. But then all the ghost guys were here. Mark, Grayson, the whole gang of them. Mr. Luciano bailed early, but the rest of them closed the place down."
She leaned her elbows on the bar.
"I'll say this, though. She was flirting with every single one of them. I'd say she left the whole lot of them in confusion about who might go home with her, if you know what I mean.
I knew exactly what she meant. Was Eva here?
Val smiled. Is she great or what?
Was she upset about Mallory?
Val raised an eyebrow, and I knew I'd phrased my question wrong.
No,
but there was something going on. Eva kept an eye on Mallory for sure.
So who else came in here asking questions?
Started with Officer Dave, then Doc, and now you. Is Mallory a friend of yours?
I shook my head. Barely knew her. I just feel terrible. She was all alone in a strange place and something really awful happened.
Val's eyes widened. I know what you mean. Everybody is asking how she could have drowned in shallow water like that. Of course, I have a vested interest in hoping she didn't drown because she was loaded. I just bought this place. Don't need that kind of reputation.
She leaned toward me again.
Is it true that she was wearing a ghost costume?
I nodded.
Did she ever come in here before?
Oh, sure. She was a talky sort. Had all kinds of plans to marry Mark.
Rumor had it that she wanted to move in with him, but he put the kibosh on that and sent her packing.
So she didn't live in Wagtail.
Far as I know, she came up now and then to try to win over Mark, but he wasn't interested.
This is what I want to know.
She left here at 2 a.m. wearing a nice dress with chunky jewelry, one of those bib necklaces that are so popular. Why did she change into a ghost costume in the middle of the night? Why would she do that? Was there a party somewhere in town?
I must be getting old, because when I close the bar, I go upstairs and fall into bed. The last thing in the world I would do is put on a Halloween costume and run around.
I laughed at her reference to being old, because Val was probably in her mid-30s. If memory served, though, Hair of the Dog was open for lunch, so she probably didn't get much sleep. I pulled out my wallet and paid.
Val, if you hear anything, give me a call, okay?
She smiled. Sure thing. We girls have to stick together. And then she was off, tending to something in the kitchen. Trixie and I walked home, enjoying the beautiful fall day, only to find chaos in Oma's office. We sidled past the little cluster of people crowding the room. Wearing his uniform and appearing quite official, Dave leaned against Oma's desk, his arms resolutely crossed over his chest. Rose appeared worried. Her fingers were curled into tight balls. Mr. Luciano was speaking with her. To my utter dismay, Aunt Birdie showed up. I had to give her credit for dressing well. She wore a narrow black pencil skirt with a red top and a matching shawl collar sweater belted at the waist. A prominent red and silver necklace hung on her neck, and silver earrings peeked out from under her black hair. Birdie sniffed and nodded in cool recognition when I said hello. She headed straight for Mr. Luciano and Rose. Three other people whom I didn't know mingled in the room.
"What's going on?" I whispered to Oma.
"I am so relieved that you have returned. Would you mind helping Shelley put together a little buffet lunch for us in the office?"
Oma wrung her hands.
"My first big problem is interim mayor, whether to call off the ghost walk because of Mallory's death. It's such a popular tradition, and it's only 2 days to October 31st. The visitors who are here came for our Halloween events."
"Call it off? Because she was murdered?"
"Holly, not so loud. This is what I need to determine. Most Wagtail residents live off tourism one way or another. Halloween is always a big draw."
Oma lowered her voice to the tiniest whisper.
"After all the news about the recent murders, we're having to put our best paws forward to recover."
I had been there during that time and understood how the murders might have discouraged tourists. Before then, residents like Zelda hadn't even bothered to lock their doors. Oma clapped her hands.
"But everyone, please take a seat."
I slipped out quietly to help Shelley. As usual, she already had everything under control. Today's lunch special is pulled pork. If you could set up those chafing dishes and drinks on the buffet in your grandmother's office, that would be a huge help. I'll be along shortly with the food.
I pushed the cart to Oma's office, glad to have an excuse to listen to the discussion. One of the men was saying, "I don't think there's a thing to worry about. Mallory was probably soused. It wouldn't be the first time in history that a drunk fell into water and drowned."
"Officer Dave?" asked Oma.
"The police are still searching the area as we speak. They're going through the Wagtail Springs Hotel as well. It will take some time."
"The hotel? Don't tell me we have to cancel the costume gala?"
Rose's voice escalated to a shrill pitch.
"What are you searching for?"
Dave took a deep breath.
"Evidence." "You don't think this was a tragic accident?" asked Oma.
I held my breath, thinking of Zelda. Dave seemed uncomfortable.
He placed such emphasis on the word that I wondered if he might be alone in this opinion.
"Don't believe so."
"Oh, no."
Rose gasped.
"Dave Quinlan, you better be wrong. Wagtail can't take another murder so soon after the previous ones."
One of the men whom I didn't know chimed in. "I'm speaking for all the merchants when I say that we will ruin the reputation of Wagtail if we cancel the ghost walk. People came here from great distances and at quite some personal expense. They expect to be entertained."
Another man spoke up.
"I'd like to point out that the merchants spent a lot of money in advertising and inventory and special events for Halloween."
The first man spoke again, quite angrily.
"Are we going to cancel everything? I don't see why we should single out the ghost walk."
Shelley rolled in a cart with food, and we arranged it on the buffet while the others gazed at Rose. She ticked off items on her fingers as she spoke.
"There's the apple bobbing relay to see if dogs or their owners can bob faster. Canine and feline trick-or-treating at homes throughout Wagtail. Hay rides, the cemetery celebration, dog and cat costume parades and contests, Halloween portraits, the cornfield maze for dogs, the ghostly feather agility games for cats, and the grand costume gala at the hotel. Not to mention the unofficial contests and specials being held by individual stores and businesses."
"A costume gala at a deserted hotel? Had I heard that correctly?"
The merchant shook his head.
"We can't call everything off. They don't do that in other towns. Can you imagine any big city that would cancel everything because one person died? It might be different if we had a madman on the loose, but..."
He glared at Dave.
"What we've got on our hands is the very sad drowning of a drunken young woman. I say we sweep it under the rug as quickly as we can."
My eyes met Shelley's. She appeared as horrified as I felt.
"Let's not make light of this," said Oma. "Mallory's death is a terrible tragedy."
Luciano cleared his throat.
"Look, I'm as upset about this as everyone else, but I'm footing the bill for an entire TV crew. What are we talking about realistically? Will we be able to get inside the hotel tonight to shoot the show?"
"I still don't understand,"